Guys, I'm really excited to welcome this week's guest. Tom Whitchurch, aka Tom Foodery, is a fellow foodie like me. He's based here in Bristol and he's had loads of different viral successes based around food brands, his own food brands, his own food business, and local food businesses that he's partnered with to promote their products with viral content. Tom's obviously mastered this to a certain extent because he's had loads of different successes, including the Crisp Buffet with his own food business, which was a buffet of retro style crisps like Monster Munch and Space Invaders. This went huge. Also, he partnered with a local business to make their breakfast, their full English breakfast with gravy, go viral, get a hell of a lot of attention through channels like Unilad, Lad Bible. And after starting his series of tiny cooking videos, making tiny versions of meals, he was asked by Disney to come and help them promote the film Ant-Man, cooking tiny omelets with Evangelina Lilly. This is an awesome episode if you've got a food business, if you've got any kind of business that you're trying to get attention online. There's loads of really interesting psychology and building blocks of going viral that Tom uses every time he creates new content. And we also talk about various different strategies to monetize viral content for existing businesses, for existing campaigns, and for people getting into this for the first time.
Welcome to the Viral by Design podcast with Dave Rotherow, where we get inside the minds of today's leading viral marketers as they reveal the exact strategies they use to build brands, products, and campaigns that are magnetic to customers, spread like wildfire, and seize the attention of millions. This is Viral by Design.
So how did you actually get started making viral content? What was your journey to doing stuff like the breakfast of gravy and tiny cook and all that kind of thing? Where did it all kind of start out?
So it all started obviously running my business Foozy, which was kind of events and content led. And I remember my first kind of taste of viral. And it was semi-intentional. I wanted to create something that went, that caused a buzz in Bristol. I didn't necessarily intend for it to escape Bristol. And I was doing a pizza festival, and it sold well, but it needed a final push about 3 or 4 weeks before it started, to sell the last few tickets. So I decided to create the best job in the world, as that's what we called it, which was basically a pizza taster. So, you know, somebody was going to win the chance to get a slice of each pizza, three people it was. And all you had to do was to enter and you get free entry and you get to try all of the pizza on the day, which you could have done anyway. Yes, you could just had to buy a ticket. You could have done all of that, but it was just the way it was presented basically is the best job in the world. And we sent that out to local press and promoted it ourselves. And within like 12 hours, it was getting published in newspapers in Scotland and throughout Europe. And I was getting friends who live in Barcelona messaging me going, oh my God, is this your event? Is this your job? Can I have it? So that was the kind of first taste of viral, which was exciting. I remember the first.
So basically what you're saying there is that you basically repositioned something that people could get for coming along anyway. You repositioned it as a job and then suddenly it completely shifted the perspective on it.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, the ticket was free. You would have had to buy a ticket to do all that, but as part of your ticket price, you got tokens to try all of the pizzas. So you really did get exactly the same thing. We're using these people as, you're saying it was a job, but kind of just, yeah, jazzing it up slightly differently, repurposing it.
That's really interesting. Yeah, do you remember seeing that thing? There was a company, I think they're called I Love Gin, and they're yes, a subscription business. So they were kind of on my radar when I was doing subscription, and they put out a job advert for a gin turn.
Yes. Yeah. I worked with them quite closely for a number of campaigns, So obviously we did the gym bus and they were helping us to promote that. But Carry On the Gin Turn was a really great campaign for them.
That's amazing. I had no idea that you were involved with that.
I wasn't involved with it. I've just done a bit of work with them. So they promoted the gin bus events that we worked on. So I worked on a couple of competition campaigns for them to help promote my events, but I wasn't involved in the gin turn campaign. That was their own kind of thing.
I get you. So with your experience, because now you've done
quite a number of things that have achieved like various degrees of virality. So yeah. it's not like you're a one-hit wonder by any means. So you must be beginning to understand the mechanics behind what actually makes stuff go viral. So what, in your opinion, what is it, if you're sitting down to make something go viral, what mechanics are you looking to hit? What psychology are you looking to implement to make that happen?
Well, it's a real tricky one, because I guess I've always set out to get the maximum reach from anything that I've done. And, you know, viral is always the ultimate goal. But in terms of formula, I guess it's just down to creating content that you know your audience will want to see, and kind of always embedding emotion in that. Now, I kind of always look at giving something the best chance of going viral by hitting a few different things. And that's, you know, dividing opinion, stuff that you can see this really from when you look at the big publishers like Lab Bible, Unilads, you know, those guys that have done stuff really well. And if you look at that for the trends, it is stuff that divides opinion, inspires or uplifts you, tugs on your heartstrings, you know, makes you angry, injects kind of nostalgia, stuff that's cute, you know, babies, dogs, cats. And if you can, touch on something with one of those things, and build a story around it, or create something that's, that you know people are going to kind of relate to, then that's the best, almost not necessarily formula, but the best way that I have found of giving something the best chance of going viral.
Okay, so a lot of kind of staying close inside the minds of the people you're trying to influence, right? Like understanding the kind of content they consume.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're all large niche areas. Do you know what I mean? And if you think about, you know, dividing opinion as a niche, or inspirational as a niche, and you know, something that's going to tug on your heartstrings as a kind of niche, they're very broad. You can tug on lots of people's heartstrings in lots of different ways. You can divide opinion in lots of different ways. It's kind of what's close to you and your brand or your channel or whatever it is you're trying to make go viral.
Right. So I'm talking of niches. So obviously you are very, very food specific. Was that intentional, or is that just kind of like, that's your kind of your thing?
It was intentional in that my business was around food events, and everything we did had a foodie or boozy element, which is where the name came from. It was lucky in that food and drink resonates with everybody in lots of different ways.
Yeah.
So we were able to create lots of quirky events and experiences and stuff that... yeah, luckily did tend to go viral quite often.
Gotcha. Yeah, what do you think it is about food that really resonates with people? Like, why is it, you think? Because I mean, obviously my background's in food as well, and I mean, it was just so easy to make melted cheese go viral. You know,
yeah.
Why is that?
Well, we've all got things that we love, and we've all got things that we hate. And we all know people that love and hate things with regards to food. You know, we all know somebody that loves burgers. We know somebody that loves gin, and we know somebody that loves cheese. And I think it all boils down to psychology, really. We all love to be known for something or identified as something, even if we pretend we don't. If you get tagged in something by 10 different people about gin, you kind of take on that persona as the gin expert or the gin lover within your group. Do you see what I mean? And it's down to that kind of almost claiming ownership and character building. And I think we all love that and we'll kind of thrive on that. And I think it definitely plays a big part into supporting things going viral or us resonating with food and drink in such a way that we do.
I get that. Yeah, I completely hear what you're saying. I mean, I think, you know, people from my experience share stuff to people that they think it represents, right? So,
yeah.
So everybody, as you say, everyone loves a cheese lover, and therefore it's more likely that somebody would share something about cheese to somebody they know is really emotionally invested in cheese.
Yeah,
as definitely. Opposed to like a general post about anything general, like football or something, right?
Yeah, I mean, gin just blew up out of nowhere, you know, and it's kind of teetering off a little bit now. But I know lots of people that when I was doing my gym bus events, when it was going nuts, it was going really viral, there was the same like 10 people that I knew getting tagged multiple times in the post that we were putting out, and they're like, oh my god, this is for you, this is so good for you, this is so for you, and people love it, you know, people like to take on that identity with things. It's it's interesting.
Right, the alcoholics that are getting there pulled out of the wardrobe.
Yeah.
So when you're running one of these campaigns, one really interesting thing to me is seeding, like how you actually get that initial kind of boost into the marketplace. I was actually reading today about, they just found the guy. Did you know this? They found the guy who did the world record egg on Instagram.
Yes. I did see that.
So he was talking about like how he was relatively secretive about exactly how the secret sauce, as he put it, as to how it went viral. But one of the big things that he mentioned was seeding to influencers. I'm not sure whether he used the term seeding, but actually engaging influencers. Like, yeah. Is that something, I know that you do work with influencers. Is that like a critical part of what you do, or do you have any other kind of strategies without giving away your secret sauce?
It's definitely not. So I work, you know, by day for an influencer marketing agency, and it's a great way of seeding any kind of message. But it's definitely by no means the only way. Not really, very rarely with Fousey did we use any influencers to amplify that initial message. It was just creating something that, as I said, did kind of either divide opinion or was quirky enough or intriguing enough to make people want to share it and make people want to get involved with it and consume it. But yeah, in terms of actual seeding that message initially, it's so, so important. I think that's actually one of the two kind of strategies that I would use, and that is making sure that the initial piece of content is being created with that emotion and with that audience in mind. And then the second part of the strategy then is seeding and where you get that, where that's initially placed.
Okay, that's really interesting. So in terms of platforms, obviously all platforms all kind of work in their own way, and you need to kind of understand the syntax and like the way people post, the way people engage. But for you, what are you, I know you work quite a bit with YouTube and YouTube influencers, but what would you say, A, are your favorite platforms, or is your favorite platform, and B, which is the most realistic if you're trying to get something to catch on, which has the most kind of amplification effect, if that makes sense?
Yeah, so in the days of Fousey, it was, without a shadow of a doubt, it was Facebook. Facebook was the most powerful platform for us. YouTube had already built up to such a degree that it was difficult to get any kind of traction with it unless you already had a big audience. With Facebook, you just needed that initial first kind of hour of really strong engagement. If people were really, you know, commenting on it and sharing it really quickly, which is where, you know, the likes of LabBomb, you know, did so well, their algorithm would kick in and it would just start pumping out to as many people as possible. But now I think they all have their own merits. It just depends what that message is and who you're trying to find. If you're going for a kind of youth culture, I would say that, you know, Snapchat, Instagram are definitely the places to be. Then if it's more kind of product related, I would still say that, you know, Instagram and Facebook still have their definite strengths.
Gotcha. Yeah. And in terms of like the stuff that you do is obviously quite campaign driven. So what I mean by that is it isn't necessarily like driving people directly towards a product, but, you know, it does fundamentally draw back around to that. So obviously the breakfast with gravy thing that drew back around to the actual guys you were working with who had that on their menu. But in terms of like businesses and people out there with existing products or existing services, they want to achieve some kind of virality. How do you kind of choose something? Like, can anything go viral? Can you find a viral edge in anything, you think? Or do you have to kind of go and figure out what the audience wants and create something specifically for them with the intention of it going viral?
I think, let's say you could make anything go viral. But I think most things you can find, you can make it relate to the right people. You know, you're going to get stuff which goes massive, massive viral in terms of like hundreds of millions. If you're looking at smaller niches, then where you've actually probably only got, 10, 20 million people in the world that would be interested in it, if you can reach 1% of those, then that's great. So it's just going to depend on your product and being realistic, I think, with how viral something can realistically go. There's definite ways of reaching large audiences with viral campaigns by some kind of simple methods, and that is looking at how you can strike up emotion with the people that would want to buy, look, or see your products. Definitely.
Great. So what's next for you, Tom? What are you working on at the moment, and like what are your kind of schemes?
So I've got a number of projects. I've actually got kind of a few too many projects in my head that I kind of want to run with at the moment. All are around content campaign style businesses. I'm really happy working with this YouTube agency at the moment, which is Fourth Floor, part of Yogscast, who have, now like 20 million subscribers over their various YouTube channels. It's super interesting. I'm really enjoying working for these guys. So that's good for the immediate time, but without giving too much away, it's next project is probably going to be around food and drink events again.
Sounds exciting.
Yeah. Well, it's just a sucker for punishment, maybe.
No, that's awesome. So if you could sort of, for anyone listening, like if people were looking to create some kind of viral content to kind of get attention for their brand, if you were starting from zero, what would be your best advice for people to kick off?
It would be around creating emotion, and it doesn't matter what that emotion is, but just think about how that's going to resonate. If it's a product that you want to promote, really do some hefty delving into the data that you have on your customers or your potential customers, and look at the story that you can either build around your business or your product that's going to resonate with people, or they're going to find funny or interesting, or it's going to completely divide opinion. That's the best way, is hit some feels, as they say. Or if you're a content creator and you're looking to do something, it's a similar similar recipe, but you just need to think about yourself and the content that you've already created and how you can get that message across about yourself and whatever your content, whatever content subject is.
Okay. Yeah. So, and business, so businesses that might be listening, what do you think is a better angle for them? Is it to actually go at this alone, and kind of try and figure something out? Or do you think it's better to reaching out to influencers or to people like you as a freelancer, or like what's the best kind of way of getting them getting involved?
I would test as many things as you can as cheaply as possible first, before you inject any real money into anything. When I was running Fousey, one real valuable learning that we found was we were spending, up to thousands of pounds on professional videos to be made. And we'd get super hyped about it. We'd get really, really excited about publishing this on Facebook and Instagram, and then we'd publish it and it just didn't really go anywhere. And then the same event, the same topic, I would just film something on my phone. We did a retro, what was the event called? Craft Beer and Afternoon Tea. And I just shot this video on my phone. I walked around this cake stand with some big sandwiches and stuff on it, and published that. And literally within 3 or 4 days, we had close to 1 million hits, and I'd spent, you know, £1,000 on a video only 3 or 4 weeks before. Exactly the same content. It was just a bit more organic, a bit more raw, a bit more honest, and just less polished. And our audience really resonated with that. So I would do something along those lines. Try and pick up your phone and see what content you can make with that. Publish it, see what reaction you get. Do 10 videos and see what reaction you get, which one works. Reach out to people that you can just gift your products to, and pick a variety, pick 10 influencers that have varying shades of, you know, their audiences kind of touch your business in different ways, and see what works best and learn from that. And then, you know, spend the money and try and do something much bigger.
So that's really interesting what you said about content which was shot on your phone. So just to recap on that, you'd shot professional videos with professional videographers and it didn't really go anywhere. You shot really handmade mobile phone footage and it went crazy. That is fascinating. And that kind of touches on, because I've come across this a lot in the past, you know, people kind of convinced that they need to advertise on social media platforms or even just to run organic content with a potential going viral, that they need to invest a lot of money in video making. And obviously that's what they're getting told by videographers because they want to make a check, right? But so that's really fascinating, the fact that that worked for you on such a kind of huge scale. Why do you personally think that is, that the homemade video content works so much better than, in this context at least, works so much better than professional videographer shows?
Just purely because it's just much more honest. I call it the McDonald's effect, really, with regards to food and drink especially, in that, you know, that if you watch a McDonald's advert, the burgers look beautiful and they, you know, it's absolutely perfect. And you know, in reality, when you go and get one, it's going to be the complete and utter opposite. And I think we're so in tune with that now. The advertising is completely unrealistic to what you actually, in reality, you actually get. So if you've taken something and you see something which is shot on a phone and it's shaky and you can tell that that person hasn't got, you know, it's just the food's come to the table and someone's taken a video of it, people just resonate with it much, much more. There's not the risk of being duped, if you see what I mean. And, you know, you've got to look at infomercials and stuff as well. I mean, we've spoken before about Harman Brothers and so on, and their campaigns do so well. It's tongue in cheek and it's well shot. But in the history of kind of infomercials, they're super cheesy and they're not actually that well made. And I think that's kind of part of their charm, if you like. So we've totally stopped doing professionally made videos. We would kind of up the quality of the production depending on what it was, but it would always be kind of raw, shaky footage.
It's interesting, you know, because the way I see it, that's like an advantage that small brands and new businesses have got over bigger companies, like, as you say, like McDonald's, people like that. Because I don't know, I mean, I guess it would be difficult for McDonald's to directly get away with that. They couldn't necessarily start posting really kind of shaky photos of their Big Mac. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
It's an interesting thing. It's definitely something worth bearing in mind for smaller businesses. One thing that you mentioned before as well, which I really wanted to go a bit deeper on, was divergence of opinion. Because this is something which I think scares people. The idea of dividing opinion, the idea of having a camp of people who are actually either pissed off or offended or whatever else. That's a really interesting point, because I know how powerful it is, and I know that you spoke, we've kind of chatted about like how you've had success with it in the past. Where have you experienced that, the whole divergence of opinion, and like how has that worked out for you?
A lot of the things that we did used to kind of divide opinion. The main one was the breakfast gravy. So I saw a pub in Bristol, really good one, the Old Bookshop, were doing full English breakfast with gravy, and it was breakfast gravy. I can't remember what it was made from. Anyway, that's besides the point. It was a pudding as breakfast with a jug of gravy next to it. And when I saw it, I just knew, that it would go nuts. I knew people would love it or hate it. So it took me a couple of weeks to get down there, and I eventually did. And again, shaky iPhone footage, just shot with my phone as I was eating, you know, the plate goes out of shot at some points where I'm trying to eat and shoot at the same time. But the most fundamental part was the gravy being poured over the breakfast and the egg totally rejecting the gravy. You pour it on and it just slid straight off. And that was one of the main comments, was people saying that the egg was rejecting the gravy and therefore it wasn't right. It went nuts, you know. And then just going back to what we said about seeding, I posted it on the Fousey channel, on the Fousey Facebook page, and people were commenting on it and what have you. And then I thought to myself, right, this needs to go into the Fry Up Police Facebook group.
I know the Fry Up Police. Amazing.
Yeah, really successful. I went to publish it in there. Little did I know that somebody else had already posted it in there. Was getting mad engagement. Obviously, the likes of Lab Bible and Unilads follow that group as well. And then within 24 hours, it was everywhere. You know, it was in the Sun. It was in the Daily Mirror. It was in Asda were tweeting us about it and stuff. It was crazy. That was kind of the main ones, and I think it's a really powerful way of doing it. If I've got time, I'll just say this as well, that the most recent campaign that I thought was really strong for that was the Justin Bieber one, when he eats the burrito through the middle. We spoke about this before, have you? So yeah, these YouTubers, they wanted just purely going out to create a viral video, and that was their ambition. They knew that Justin Bieber was hot right now, and so they had a couple of ideas. One was to take a candid video of Justin Bieber, or fake Justin Bieber they'd hired, helping an old lady across the road, and something else. And then they finally settled with Justin Bieber sat on a park bench eating a burrito, but from the middle. They posted it, published it, didn't really get much traction, and then they seeded it into this. They found this subgroup of Reddit called Mild Annoyances, or Things That Mildly Annoy You. Dropped a video into there after a week or two of trying to get this thing to blow up, and sure enough, you know, every major radio show, every website in the world is pretty much talking about Justin Bieber eating a bloody burrito from the middle. I mean, it's not news, is it? But it touches people. It makes people just go, what the hell are you doing? What the monster?
It's amazing. And you know what? I think there's a really interesting point there, because everyone today seems to love to be outraged, right? It's like fashionable to be outraged at stuff.
Yeah.
I think that's something that you can ride. You know, I mean, that's the perfect illustration of riding the wave of outrage. Like, so many people are going to shout about it. So many people are going to talk about it, that inevitably people say, for argument's sake, it's, you know, it's not the, because I mean, I don't know exactly how they would monetize something like that. But say it's something that does outrage people. It gets that traction. It gets that reach. There's inevitably going to be collateral of people who actually like the product, people who click through, buy whatever, build a relationship with that brand. Which is so powerful, you know, but I think some people are so scared of getting trolled, right?
Totally, yeah. And I think in terms of the monetization side, I mean, they were a YouTube channel, and I think first and foremost for them is to get eyeballs. And I think it's just a really powerful thing for any business or content creator, is if you can build those eyeballs, if you can get people discovering your brand through a campaign that manages to go viral. Just work out some, if you can't just sell the products directly, work out some secondary deliverables. Is that just going to, do you want to just harness email addresses from that? Social followers? There's lots of other things that can be super beneficial as a kind of, a secondary capture, if you like, if you can't just generate sales from it.
Yeah, absolutely. This is something that really, really interests me, you know, is like the concept of not just sending something viral, but like figuring out a way to monetize it as well, which is like, I think a lot of people kind of view virality as especially a lot of like direct response marketers, like professional marketers, virality is A, something which is way out of reach because nobody's kind of nailed the formula for it yet. And, you know, I don't think there necessarily is a set formula, but I'm convinced even, you know, our conversation so far has already highlighted a few of them, like emotion, divergent opinion, but to be able to block something together, which is effective, but also being able to drive people to a, to monetization, which I think, you know, people are starting to do, you know, especially like you mentioned Harman Brothers, and I know that you and I are massive fanboys of the Harman Brothers. But so good. Yeah, no, it's really interesting to hear. So that's how a lot of the guys that you work with monetize. Is it through that kind of thing, driving people to sell processes, or is it getting brand sponsorships, or what kind of thing is it primarily that people do?
Yeah, it really depends. So the YouTubers that we work with, we're working with brands that want to integrate their products, mainly games in this office, but I'm working with food and drink brands to get themselves exposed to new audiences, which is obviously a massive thing for any business. And yeah, I guess viral is always an option, but it's not always the key deliverable, just because it is so hit and miss, you know. And if we were trying to be a business that was, you know, only creating viral videos, we'd probably not hit the mark most of the times, because it's not easy. As you just said just now, there isn't a magic formula, but there's definitely a series of events that can give you the best chance.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, I guess from what you said there, it's like, it's just a case of keep making stuff, keep trying stuff until something hits right. It's just a numbers game.
It is. Yeah, it is. And I think, you're never going to get something that goes viral every month, every week, every 6 months, and nor do you really want to. I think, you know, it's great if you can create, you know, one or two moments in a year as a business that really, really amplify your brand message and really, really hit lots and lots of new potential customers and make the current audience that you have got brand advocates. That's obviously the aim, but trying to do something too regularly just won't work. You kind of think that's really important to realize that trying to constantly go viral is probably not a good thing, and you probably just drive yourself insane as well.
Gotcha. Tom, as a fellow foodie, it has been an absolute pleasure to have a conversation.
Thanks, mate. Yeah, it's my first ever podcast, so
really awesome. Thanks for having me on. It was, been very enjoyable. Thanks for coming on.
So if you like yourself a bit of food porn, you need to go over and check out Tom's Instagram account right now. He's at @Tom_foodery. So that's @Tom, @Tom_foodery. Or if you want to go check out Tom's website, you can go to tomfoodery.co to find out more. As ever, you can find detailed clip notes on this episode and all the other episodes online at viralbydesign.net.
This has been the Viral by Design podcast with Dave Rothero. For more viral marketing secrets and to get detailed cliff notes on all episodes, visit viralbydesign.net.